pair of shoes. It's like a country. The uppers, maybe fine shiny leather. The whole thing is held together by the sole. It's the whole shoe that's important. Uppers, sole, stitching, nails. The same with the country. You need all the parts, and they all have to be strong. There. Finished. As fine a pair of boots as any in the whole of Boston town.
This is Inheritance, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the American Legion. Stories out of that great fabric of visions, struggles, and accomplishments of the American past. Stories of our inheritance.
About 10 years ago, they say times was better. And I guess they was. Now, let me see, that makes it, 1832. I had my own shop then. Not much of a place. Quite small. 10-footers, we used to call them. I worked there with Francis Kingsbury and John Highland. Good journeymen both. Although Francis tended to loose stitches in the morning. Him being given to hot rum grog in the nights. But by 12 o'clock, though, he could sew as fine a boot as the next man. We was fine journeyman cordwainers, shoemakers. And then there was a spell of bad times. Shipping was down, the price of grain, and a few other like trifles. Folks was making do with what boots they had. And we were in the shop, John and Francis and I, passing the time making cheap jack boots against upturn of business. Take the nails out of your mouth, Francis.
Harry, you've been thinking.
Not of boots, you ain't. You could drive a herd of sheep through them stitches.
I'll pull them up. I've been thinking, what's the use of making these boots? Nobody buys them.
Times will pick up. A good made boot is a comfort to humanity.
But I...
Francis, you mark me now. All the evil in the world is caused by one thing. And do you know what it is?
Rum?
Women?
Neither. Bad fit in boots.
Ah.
No, it's a swell... It's a well thought on theory, Bine. Now, you take the revolution. My old father tells me that. And you know what lay behind the whole thing?
Independence.
Taxation?
Aye. But back of that was old King George. A mean, crazy old man. And what drove him crazy? Tight boots.
Ralph.
If he'd ordered his boots from an honest Boston cordwainer, we'd still be under the British crown, and there'd be redcoats in Castle William today.
As a patriotic American, I say 3 cheers for tight boots.
you missed my point. Now, let us consider.
Ah, this is just what I was talking about, Harry. Here we spend our time philosophizing over politics and history. Why? Because we don't have the work to keep our mouths shut with nails like they ought to be.
Times have been bad before. When I was an apprentice during the war, 1815 or so, there wasn't a hard shilling in the whole town of Boston.
Yeah, but what's the use? Now, Harry, you know...
Excuse me.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I wonder if you can help me, sir.
Naturally. Boots, I'll warrant. Handsome hunting boots, black as your hat and soft enough...
I'm sorry, I'm not interested in boots. That is, not in buying them. I make them.
Oh, well, I'm sorry, friend. I'm not in the position to put on any more journeymen.
I'm not a shoemaker, sir.
Well, you said you make boots.
Not precisely, sir. I manufacture them. I have the works at Milton and here in Boston itself.
Oh, the big mill off by the river? Oh, that's yours?
Not exactly. I'm the factor. I manage the concern for the owners. Now, I'm looking for a Jowett. Harry Jowett.
That's him.
Oh, that's right.
Well, Jowett, several of the hands at the mill spoke to me about you. They knew you some years ago.
Well...
I'm putting on hands. I'm looking for journeymen cordwainers to come to work for me.
Oh, you mean in your mill?
That's right. Weekly wages.
Weekly wages, Harry? Did you hear that?
I've got 80 men working under me now. We got water power, turning machinery. We've got the work divided after the fashion of Mr. Whitney's rifle works at the Springfield Arsenal. You might as well come make boots for me, Jowett. At your price, you'll find no one to buy them.
That's right.
Well,
nobody
does buy
them. I'll think on it.
The rest of you men, come Monday morning if you want the situation. The bell rings at 6 o'clock. Mention my name to the paymaster. Logan. Caldwell Logan.
We'll think on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, goodbye, George. That's a fine pair of boots you're working on.
Yeah, it is.
But you'll never find a buyer. Not at your price.
Well, did you hear that, Harry? Weekly wages.
And the work day. Why, you could lie in bed until six.
Let some other man worry about finding a buyer for the boots. Harry, are you going?
I don't know.
You'd be a fool if you didn't. Here's your boot. Can we sell it for a dollar? Not if we don't want to give up eating. It's a pernicious habit.
But we are masters in our own shop.
A miserable 10-footer.
Logan's mill is that fine brick building, the one behind the brewery. What do you say, Harry?
I'll think on it. And so on Monday morning at 6 o'clock, we presented our names to the paymaster, and he wrote us down in his book. It was an enormous place, Logan's mill. He had near 100 working men and boys, including the teamsters and the mechanics who mended the vast machinery driven by the falling water that raced by outside. And he had the work divided, so that one man didn't finish a pair of shoes from counter to tip, but Francis worked at cutting the hides, John at shaping, and I hammered and stitch. But now each pair of boots was like the other. The uppers of one would fit the sole of another. And somehow this bothered me.
Harry, you haven't started on your lunch pail. The bell'll ring in 10 minutes.
And I was thinking.
You'll start eating, you'll go hungry till dark.
I suppose so. I was thinking of the boots. When we had the shop, each pair was different. Shaped to a man's foot. A little tuck here, a little bulge there. Now they all come out alike as peas in a pod.
How would you have them? Uppers an inch longer than the soles?
No. But they seem so friendless lined up for varnish.
Is that what you worry about, Harry Jowett? Whether a lot of dollar boots have friends or no?
Yeah, I suppose it is queer.
It is. You get a good wage. 6 days' work each week, that's enough. Time to start worrying when that stops. Hurry up now. I'll be throwing the lever on the belt in a minute. You know what Carmody to dock you for being late, do you?
And so the years wore on, until I all but forgot the days before the factory, when a cordwainer was his own master. And if he felt like knocking off a day to hunt or fish, well, no one was the wiser. Yeah, but then, as they always have, the times changed.
Come in. Close the door, man. Well?
Mr. Logan.
Hmm? Oh, Jowett. What is it?
Mr. Logan.
Go ahead, Jowett.
It's the matter of the... Carmody didn't ring the closing bell till an hour past time.
Well?
The men worked an extra hour.
I know.
But there was a dollar less a man in the pay envelope.
Yes.
And John Hyland and Davy Wheeler and George O'Hara were all told to take their tools home.
I know that.
Well, the men asked me to ask you to...
Look, Jowett, you read the papers?
Hey, you.
You know about the panic.
Yes, but...
I get my orders from the owners, Jowett. You understand that? It's the times. You can't make a profit on a pair of boots if it costs you more to make them. You had a shop, didn't you?
Hey, a long time ago.
Well, then you understand.
But... But O'Hara has a family, and so has John.
I know. Now, look, Jowett, I'm sure times will pick up. In the meantime, if we all pitch in, we'll weather the storm, won't we, man?
Well...
Eh?
But an hour more of work, for less pay, and men put out on the streets...
Is that all, Jowett?
I suppose so, Mr. Logan. I can't think of anything else to say.
Thank you.
to be sure I did understand, after a fashion. It was the same for all. Weavers, iron workers, printers. Many an honest workingman walked the streets of Boston looking for a job. Any job. At any pay. And we spoke of it at Jeremy's over a small beer.
And why shouldn't he give John the sack? Put on a man from Milton at his place to work for $3 less a week.
A cordwainer?
A farmer evicted off his farm.
How can he make shoes?
He can follow a pattern to cut the leather. John made the pattern himself just last week, and now his job is gone to a farmer.
The laborer is worthy of his hire. That's scripture.
Maybe. But in Boston this year, labor's worthy of whatever he can get, and that isn't much.
Yes, but if I was to go to Mr. Logan and tell him I wouldn't work unless we didn't get our wages cut,
you'd be out cooling your heels on the street alongside of John and some 12-thumb plowboy at your bench.
But I'm a master cordwainer. I served my apprenticeship under old Grandsir Wheelock, and I was journeyman under Jemmy Partridge on Tremont Street.
Go tell that to Mr. Logan, see if he cuts your hours and raises your wages. Times have changed, Harry. We're not our own masters anymore. So, have another pint of beer and drink damnation to who it was discovered you could make boots with plowboys and farmers instead of master cordwainers.
That night I sit up by the fire and fed gruel to old Grandma Potter. She's 85 and does poorly with her feeding. And sometimes she forgets that the years have gone by.
Mind the spoon, Harry, Dad.
I'm sorry, Grandma.
It was spilled on my apron. My best one it is. Oh, the pity of the fine lace, all spattered and dirty.
Well, no, it didn't spill, Grandma.
Well, that's a blessing, and thank the Lord for small favors. If my own granddaughter won't care for me, I'm left to the mercies of strangers.
Now, Grandma, Mariah's in the other room with the baby, and I'm not a stranger. Now, here, take another spoonful.
No, I won't.
Well, now, you've got to eat your gruel, Grandma. Keep up your strength.
It's not sweet enough. There's no sugar on it.
Grandma, you know how times are. Sugar costs money.
Am I to be denied a little sweetening before I die? Me that saw the first shot fired at the glorious revolution.
I know, Grandma. You told me. Now, just one more spoon.
Harry, why aren't you with General Stark and the New Hampshire regiment?
You're thinking of Father. I'm little Harry, Grandma. Don't you remember?
Don't hang back, boy. The general needs every man. If you want to preserve your liberty, you've got to all stick together and fight. Right. Right is the thing.
I suppose so, Grandma.
You can bet your last shilling on it. Now, you get your uniform and your musket. You get back there and fight.
Maybe we'll have to, Grandma.
Before you go, Harry.
All right, Grandma.
Couldn't I have just a wee bit of sugar on my gruel?
I was thinking of Grandma and the War of Independence and how my father, Big Harry, enlisted in the New Hampshire regiment under John Stark and didn't come back from Bennington. I was thinking of that when Francis Kingsbury pulled me aside after work the next day.
Harry?
It was another half hour longer today.
I know. Listen, Harry.
Ben Gatling was let out. There was a boy at his bench.
I know. Will you listen? We're all meeting at Mechanics Hall tonight at 10.
What for?
To form a society.
Well, I haven't time for a lodge or anything like that, Francis.
Not a lodge, Harry.
Huh?
A society of cordwainers. You'll be there. 10 o'clock at Mechanics Hall.
And so that night, the Boston Society of Journeymen Bootmakers was formed. And a resolution was passed calling on the society to act to maintain that rate of wages which is necessary to ensure us the necessities of life. The necessities of life.
Are you going to get me sugar, Harry?
We've got a lot of work to do, Grandma. We've got to get all the bootmakers of Boston to join the society. Now, that's the first thing.
Ah, and then you'll burn down the mill. Harry? They did that the year of the Battle of Bunker Hill. Burn down the houses of the Tories. Harry, Do you go burn Squire Masterson's house the first? He's a notorious lobster.
No, Grandma, no, you're all mixed up. We're not burning down anyone's house. That was all long ago.
Oh, it was? Well, I'm sure that somebody will burn Squire Masterson's house. Oh, he's a notorious story.
Grandma, we've got to see that the masters hire no one but members of the society. Now, do you understand, Grandma?
No. But you fight for your rights like good Americans, or you won't let the red coats walk all over you.
Grandma, the red coats are all gone. That was years ago.
Oh, maybe so, but you will fight, won't you, Harry?
Yeah. I suppose we will, Grandma. Now, you go off to bed.
Well, man, what is it? Jowett?
Mr. Logan,
we're here representing the society.
What society, Jowett?
The Boston Society of Journeymen Bootmakers.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now, man, you'd best think what you're doing.
We have thought, Mr. Logan. There isn't a man in the society that wasn't his own master a few years back. At least all but the boys. We intend to see that we are again our own masters. At least to where we can keep our wages where they were. And the hours, too.
That's right.
Now, you men know the times as well as I do. You think I want to cut the wages?
That don't signify, Mr. Logan. You've got boys and men working that never saw a cobbler's bench till they came here. Working for less than half what a self-respecting cordwainer would take. Now, we've bound ourselves not to work for a man that hires men who aren't members of the society. Well, that's the way it stands.
We voted on it. That's the way it stands.
You're making a big mistake, man.
Maybe. But we can't live if the wages go down again.
They are. This week?
There, you see, men? Oh, we don't have to take that now. Don't have to wait till we get thrown out on the street and some half-trained farm boy takes the bread out of our mouths.
Now, you're not the first man who thought this way. Jowett, the rest of you. I'm warning you to abandon this society. It'll bring you nothing but trouble.
But we didn't. We couldn't. For there were more and more men out of work. And the wages fell, and the hours grew. And for every man standing at the bench, there were five poor devils in the streets ready to take up his tools for a dollar less, or two, or three. We stood firm at Logan's mill. We wouldn't work. We stood around the gates and jeered at the few men and boys that went in past us to work.
You yellow-bellied robbers, come out of there and join the society.
He shouldn't be shouting like that, Francis. It's not properly dignified.
It's cold. It keeps him warm.
Black legs, you black legs.
Poke up the fire.
There's somebody coming out of the mill.
Join the society.
It's Mr. Logan.
He's coming over. Now, put down your collar, Francis, and try not to look hungry.
All right.
Jowett.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Logan.
Listen, Jowett, I've got to talk to you.
Stand close to the fire, Mr. Logan. It's cold.
Listen, Jowett.
Yes, sir.
I've had a letter from the owners. Let me appeal to you before something terrible happens. Forget about the society.
We can't, sir.
I can't tell you anything more, but believe me, Jowett, you can't press the owners too far.
But a week later that it happened. We were standing around the gate of the mill when a man in a high muffler with a tall black hat came up.
Which one of you men is Harry Jowett?
Harry?
Hey, Francis.
Harry, here's a man here for you.
You, Harry Jowett?
Hey, yeah.
Then come with me.
What for?
I'm arresting you for conspiracy.
What are you talking about? Conspiracy to do what?
I haven't the faintest idea, my friend. I get my warrants and I carry them out. Now come along.
You can't take him.
I can't. And who might you be?
Huh? Or Francis Kingsbury.
I have a warrant for you, too. Come along, both of you.
The society went bail bond, and soon we were seeking an attorney to represent us before the Municipal Court of Boston. We found one at Grant's Coffee House, opposite Faneuil Hall.
Conspiracy, eh? But what have you done?
murdered a widow for the silver in a false teeth?
No, Mr. Griswold. We've done nothing but form a society of bootmakers.
To keep up our wages.
Oh, well. I suppose you've tried to force your employers to hire none but members of your society?
Yes, sir.
And you've attempted to persuade other journeymen to join?
We attempted, yes.
Gentlemen, you have come to the wrong man.
But, Mr. Griswold,
if it were a mere matter of theft, or perhaps a delicate and amusing murder, well, I might get you off. But this...
But we've done nothing. Nothing but joined together to protect our bread.
My dear sir, you have conspired together. That is a different matter in the eyes of the law. A criminal matter.
Well, not criminals. We're bootmakers.
That remains to be seen.
Well, will you defend us, sir?
There are other attorneys in Boston. Go to them.
We did.
They turned us down. They said the only lawyer who'd take a case like ours was an old...
They did? Have you money?
Well, the society has, sir. What would your fee be, Mr. Griswold?
My fee, let me see now. I owe Grant $127.08. My fee, gentlemen, is $127.08.
The case came to trial the October term. There were seven of us indicted. And the county attorney sounded as though he were nailing cobbler's nails into our coffins.
The gist of conspiracy is the unlawful confederacy to do an unlawful act.
Objection!
On what grounds, Mr. Griswold?
My learned colleague has not proven an unlawful act. Bringing pressure on journeymen and masters is not unlawful or criminal by statute or common law.
If I may proceed, sir, or even a lawful act... with an unlawful purpose.
I see. Objection denied.
At length, the judge pulled a long face and addressed the jury.
I am of the opinion, and is my duty to instruct you as a matter of law, that this society of journeymen bootmakers is an unlawful conspiracy against the laws of this commonwealth. If such association should be organized through the various professions of the people of this commonwealth, all industry and enterprise would be suspended, and all property would become insecure. A frightful despotism would soon be erected on the ruins of this free and happy commonwealth.
What happens now, Mr. Griswold?
The jury has no choice. The judge himself asks for a verdict of guilty.
But he can't.
He has.
Well, what then?
You can appeal to the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts. I'll ask a bill of exceptions, but...
But, Mr. Griswold...
We'll face the buts when we face the Supreme Court.
And then Mr. Revere came by on his horse. And Father asked him to stay. He wanted to talk to him.
About the redcoats, Grandma?
No. Mr. Revere made Father's false teeth. They never did fit.
I know, Grandma.
I wish he was here now.
Your father?
Oh, Mr. Revere. If I had teeth like he made, I wouldn't have to eat this gruel.
You're lucky, Grandma. The rest of us don't have the excuse. We just eat gruel and like it.
Don't have to like it. Oh, that's him. Oh, go let him in, Harry. Tell him to bring his horse round by the back. Don't show a light, or the redcoats may see.
Grandma, you're wandering again. The redcoats have been gone for years. It's 1842.
I know it is. I'm not as feckless as some. It's still somebody knocking.
Yes, yes. Come in. Oh, Francis.
Harry. Harry, it's come.
Huh?
Bring your horse around to the back. Mr. Revere.
Who?
Paul Revere. You know how Grandma is.
Oh, yes. All right, Grandma. The redcoats aren't coming tonight. You can sleep easy. I'll warn you if they come.
Harry.
What is it, Grandma?
Poor Francis Kingsbury thinks he's Paul Revere.
Well, do I have news, Harry? It's come.
What?
The decision. The appeal before the Supreme Court. Mr. Griswold read it to me.
Well, what is it, Francis? What is it?
Well, I got the whole thing in my head.
Uh-huh.
Not the words, mind you, but the meat of it. Chief Justice Lemuel Short was. He says, gentlemen, you can give a dog a bad name, but that don't make him a bad dog.
Judge didn't say that.
Well, not in them words, but dressed up in legal hanky-panky. It goes like this. You can't call a society an unlawful conspiracy unless you can prove it. And what did they say about the bootmakers? What was the charge? That they did unlawfully get together for an unlawful purpose and unlawful means to do unlawful things. But the lawyers forgot one thing, says Justice Shaw. They didn't bother to say just what it was. It was unlawful.
You mean the Supreme Court reversed the decision?
Turned it upside down on its head and threw it out the window. What, says the judge, is unlawful about a group of honest shoemakers trying to keep wages high enough to keep body and soul together? What have you proved? Says he, nothing but that the cordwainers stick together, so bad luck to you and be off, and hooray for the Boston cordwainers!
Francis, you're drunk.
A little, Harry, a little, and why not? Hooray for Justice Shaw! Hooray for the Boston Society of Journeymen Bootmakers! Hooray!
Hi, is it over? Is that it?
Hooray!
The battle is over. Cornwallis surrendered then. Independence is won!
That's right, Grandma. Independence is won!
Oh, that's true, isn't it, Harry? Bless General Washington. We won our freedom.
In a way, Grandma, I suppose we have.
Oh, no, that's a blessing for sure. Harry, do you suppose I could have a bit of sugar on my gold?
You've been listening to Inheritance, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the American Legion. And now it's our privilege to hear from the National Commander of the Legion, Mr. Seyborn P. Collins.
In this holy season, many Americans will observe the blessed nativity of our Lord, and many will commemorate the rededication of the temple in the Feast of Lights. It is significant that lighted candles will burn brightly this week throughout our land in honor of both Christmas and Hanukkah. Americans of all faiths and religious belief will share in the joy and festivities of the holidays. One of the greatest blessings of the American inheritance is religious freedom, which shines as a bright beacon of hope to all the world. As we gather this week in prayerful observance of the holidays, you and I may go to our place of worship without shame or fear, offer heartfelt thanks to our Creator. Many places in the world today are not so fortunate. People in many lands must pray silently and in private, behind iron and bamboo curtains where religion has been brought under state control. The people look to America as a powerful stronghold of religious freedom. Let us thank God that a country which started with a handful of colonists who longed for religious and economic liberty today still stands as a symbol of these precious goals. And let us pray that the blessings of such individual rights may become a reality throughout the world. Our desire that all men be free under God is sincere. Our gratitude for our own inheritance of freedom is unbounded. Our goal is peace on earth to men of goodwill.
Thank you, Mr. Collins. Next week, Inheritance will again take you on a journey through the pages of American history. Today's story was written by Ernest Kenoy. Special music was composed and conducted by Roy Shield. Louis Van Ruten was heard as Harry Jowett and Virginia Payne as Grandma. Others in the cast were Cameron Andrews, Robert Dryden, Edwin Jerome, Gene Leonard, and Ralph Bell. Inheritance was produced by William Welch and directed by Edward King. This is Bill Hanrahan speaking.
Enjoy fine entertainment on the Dennis Day Show today over most NBC radio stations.